Welcome to the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ.
This season, D. Richard Ferguson reads his Amazon best-selling novel, Escape from Paradise, A Layered Parable of the Christian Life. Stick around at the end to hear the author unfold the biblical basis for today's chapter and how it applies to daily life.
Chapter 7. When Adam saw the man from the front, bile rose in his throat, and he gagged. The man had been mutilated, his chest torn open. Blood still trickled through the dirt beside his leg. This had just happened. Adam's eyes swept the valley to the west and south, then north. The woods from which he had just emerged were sparse enough to see a fair distance through the trees. The forest to the north, however, was much denser. It was steep, rugged, foreboding country. The mountain people must be in that forest, and they couldn't be far. Adam turned back the way he had come and sprinted toward the cover of the trees, his eyes searching the tree line ahead and to the north. When he reached the trees, he stopped to gather his thoughts. Then, another grisly discovery. 3 more bodies, not 20 feet from the path Adam had been on, all with gaping holes in their chests. Adam's own chest pounded. The mountain people, or whoever did this, must be nearby. They might be watching him this very moment from within the black timber to the north. He considered his options. Continuing westward in the grassland was out. Too much exposure. The wind had stopped, so his natural impulse was to run full speed to the city, the only place of safety he knew. It made the most sense, but Adam didn't like the idea of having an unknown danger at his back. The best way to avoid being found, he figured, was to keep his eye on the hunter. Staying as low as possible, he crawled back toward the meadow for an unobstructed view. Just inside the tree line, he found a protected position that allowed a northward view. For most of the afternoon, he listened intently and kept an intense gaze on the edge of the black timber, watching for movement within the trees. As the sun dipped to the horizon, a deep chill descended. He would need a fire overnight, but not here, not where the killers could find him. Movement! Adam caught his breath. Just inside the thick timber, it looked like legs moving. He strained to see. A tall, dead pine stood higher than the surrounding trees. Right around there. Yes, there it was again. He was sure of it. They were up there. He reassessed his position and concluded they would not be able to see him as long as he remained still. He kept watching. Soon, 3 of them emerged from the trees into the meadow. What? Adam looked at the men, then at the pines behind them, then at the men again. His heart raced. No wonder everyone feared the mountain people. The men stood almost as tall as the trees. He wondered if his eyes were playing tricks on him. Several more giants stepped out from the trees. All were armed, swords, machetes, and clubs. They turned toward Adam. He froze. There's no way they can see me in this cover from that distance. But they were all facing his direction, and now they were running. With their gaping strides, they closed the distance with astonishing speed. Adam leapt from his nest and bolted right farther into the woods. He was fast, but he stood no chance of outrunning those monsters. They would know he didn't flee south or west because he'd be visible in the wide open grasslands. They were coming from the north, so that left only east. They would quickly overtake him if he continued that way. His only chance of not being found was to get to a spot they had already searched. When the trees blocked line of sight, Adam cut left, straight north, toward the monsters. His many years of sneaking out to search for the pond without being seen by irritable orchard dwellers had given him the ability to move silently through the woods. His only chance was to approach them head-on and pass them undetected. He crept through the trees, taking care to leave no tracks, and keeping wide of the line they had been taking when he lost sight of them. If they stayed on that course, this should work. Unless, what if there are dozens or even hundreds combing through this forest? Sooner than he had expected, footsteps pounded just ahead. He dropped to his stomach and bloodied his elbows, pulling himself into a dense thicket that stood less than 2 feet high, and hoped they didn't trample him. As one after another rumbled past, he thought he'd rather be lying in the path of stampeding buffalo. A giant foot landed so close it shoved twigs into Adam's face. In a moment, the thunderous crashing faded to the south. Evidently, they were still rushing to the spot where they had first seen him. Seconds later, Adam sprinted northward. His certainty that the giants were the ones responsible for the killings grew each time he had to step over more bodies as he made his way through the trees. As he approached the dead pine, Adam stopped to listen. Several long moments without a sound satisfied him that they had all left the area. He would examine their tracks to determine how many there were, then follow them backwards and discover where they had come from. Risky, but the more he knew about them, the better. Tracking should be easy. Such men would leave unmistakable prints in the soft forest soil. After a few minutes of searching, Adam stopped and slid his fingers through his hair. Where are the tracks? He saw a few indentations that resembled a child's prints, but the giants left no trace. Adam watched the western horizon swallow up the last golden sliver of the sun. Darkness fell, and with it, bitter cold. He would have to find cover before building his fire. While searching for tracks, he had heard movement inside the black timber, but it sounded more like the subtle scratching of animals than the marching noise humans make. Adam wondered if animals had killed those people. Whatever lurked in those woods, he needed to find shelter. Surely there must be caves in the rugged terrain within the black timber. With some effort, he broke a sturdy branch from a tree. Probably not much of a defense against a wild animal attack, but better than nothing. He took a breath, peered into the darkness ahead of him, and entered the menacing woods. An hour of hunting and some welcome moonlight brought him to an opening in the rocky hillside. As he approached the mouth of the cave, he tossed a stone into the blackness, hoping to scare any animal that might be inside. Nothing moved. Another stone. Coast is clear, I guess. He gathered an armload of sticks and used his free hand to feel his way along the cave wall. A short distance in, he kindled his fire, hoping he was close enough to the opening that the smoke would escape. Soon the flames warmed him, and he leaned against the side. A wave of fatigue swept over him, and he closed his eyes. What am I doing here? If the giants find me, I'll be cornered, and who knows what kind of animals might be in this cave. Wise or foolish, this cave was his only option right now, and he needed rest. He drew a startled breath and sat up. What was that sound? The fire was out. He listened. I'm sure I heard something. His hair moved. A flailing swing to brush the thing away impacted the side of the cave with a crack. He winced at the shooting pain and pulled his broken wrist to his chest, biting his lip to smother the moans that would give away his position. He checked his head with his good hand. Probably just a drip of water. Still, he wanted out of that cave. He rose to his feet. In that same moment, something landed on his back. This was no pebble. It was an animal, and it was biting him. The creature's teeth punctured Adam's skin. Forgetting the throbs of his fractured wrist, he flailed, nearly throwing his arm out of joint in a wild attempt to grab the creature. When he finally got a hold of it, he ripped the animal from his back and flung it with all his strength toward the back of the cave. Light filled the cave, and a man appeared before Adam. A new kind of terror gripped him, and he dropped to one knee. The man pointed to the depths of the cavern and spoke. Remember the vigor with which you cast it. Adam opened his eyes. He was alone. The cave was dark, and Adam had not moved since he had gone to sleep. His wrist was fine, and no wounds marred his body. He sat up and attempted to gather his wits. The dream troubled him. The first part was nothing unusual, as dreams go, but the man, that was different. He seemed, somehow, to be outside the dream. Adam contemplated the words, "Remember the vigor with which you cast it." What did that mean? A violent shiver shook Adam's core. The fire had clearly been out for some time, and his chilled legs could hardly stand. "I need some more wood." He felt his way along the sides toward the mouth of the cave. Something touched him from behind, and an involuntary yelp escaped his throat. He tried to run, but a massive hand clamped down on his shoulder. Adam wondered if his collarbone would snap. This time, it was no dream. Chapter 8. A godlike voice bellowed,
"What are you doing here?"
Thick, strong fingers clamped Adam's shoulder and the back of his neck and drove him out of the cave. He stumbled forward and would have fallen if not for the iron grip on his shoulder. Whoever held him seemed to see in the dark just fine. Arriving outside the cave, the dawn's first light revealed his captors. Towering before him stood the giants he thought he had escaped. His heart turned to stone. Up close, the men were even larger than he thought. Standing as tall as he could, Adam barely reached his abductor's waist. The rest of the men were even taller, and they all glared at Adam. The tallest of the men, perhaps the leader, spoke first.
"Are you lost?"
His resounding voice vibrated Adam's chest. Adam kept his eyes down.
I apologize if I'm trespassing. I'm just passing through and needed some shelter for the night. If this is your land, I'll move along."
The man released Adam, and the group slowly parted, allowing Adam an eastward path.
Actually, I was going that way," he said, turning west.
The man from the cave frowned, not moving from Adam's path. He had a square jaw, fair skin, and blonde curly hair. He glanced at the leader, who nodded, and he stepped out of the way. Adam began walking, his muscles tensed from head to toe. Would they really let him go that easily? Images of the mutilated bodies assaulted his memory. With each step, he wondered, would a sword impale him from behind? He quickened his step, daring a glance over his shoulder. The giants hadn't moved. The curly-haired one watched Adam, his expression almost concerned. Adam stopped. Why did they want me to go east? His eyes shifted westward. Is there something they know that I don't? With tentative steps, he rejoined the giants. Curly smiled.
Good choice. This isn't a good place to be alone. You'll be much safer with us. My name is Alexander, and this...
He extended his hand toward the leader as if introducing a celebrity.
...is Dr. Jensen.
I'm Adam. I was on my way to find a cottage in the high country. I heard it was...
Adam stopped when he saw their reaction. The men encircled him, and he felt like a sapling in a forest. Dr. Jensen spoke.
What business do you have with the cottage?
Jensen's searching glare gave Adam the sense he was on trial. He decided not to volunteer any more information to these men just yet. Despite the rough meeting in the cave, Alexander struck Adam as the friendliest of the group, though that wasn't saying much. Alexander broke the silence.
I don't think he's one of them. He's too big. And look at his clothes. He's from the city.
Jensen stroked his thin, salt-and-pepper beard.
Not one of whom? Adam asked.
The mountain people, Alexander replied. They're small, but dangerous.
I thought you were the mountain people. All the men laughed, except Dr. Jensen. Adam cocked his head. So, this isn't the high country?
The high country is west of the river,
Alexander said, pointing across the grassy valley.
Trust me, you do not want to go there.
Are the mountain people responsible for the bodies down there? Adam asked, nodding toward the carnage. The men exchanged glances. Then Alexander spoke.
You are welcome to join us if you like. You'll be safe with us.
With respect, that's not an answer. Adam swallowed his words when Dr. Jensen raised a brow. Adam hadn't seen it before, but now he wondered how he had missed it. Their eyes were huge. He thought back to the mural in the library. Could these be the... Adam's heart had been pounding with fear. Now it raced with hope. Are you the prophets? The great ones? For the first time, Dr. Jensen smiled.
We are students. Some call us prophets, but we have no supernatural knowledge. Quite the opposite. We are merely observers of the natural.
Adam struggled to contain his enthusiasm. I've read many of your writings and dreamed of meeting you someday. I have so many questions. All those years in the city, and I've never seen you.
We travel wherever our research takes us,
Jensen said. Do you know of a pond south of the city?
We do,
Jensen said. Could you take me there? Or tell me how to find it?
Why do you want to go to the pond?
Alexander asked. I believe I'm from another place. I need to know how I got here, and I believe the pond is the key to
It's not,
Jensen said.
And there is nowhere you could go that would be superior to the city. It boasts the richest supply of gold and fruit anywhere in the world.
With a sweep of his hand, he added,
You can see the scarcity of fruit out here.
A war between grief and desire erupted in Adam's chest. Grief, because a decade of hope in the pond as the way home had just been swept away. Desire, because the thought of returning to the gold, fruit, and safe familiarity of the city wooed him. I noticed that, Adam replied. Is it like this in the high country as well?
Fruit is outlawed in the high country,
Alexander said. Outlawed? Why? How do they live without eating?
People still eat, but they have to do it in secret to avoid shame or disciplinary action from their merciless ruler.
Have you been there? Alexander turned his head to the west.
I grew up in the high country. Before I came to my senses, I believed in all that nonsense, the myths, the magical colors, all of it.
And the cottage? You've seen it? Adam sensed from Alexander's lowered eyebrows the question may have been a mistake. It seemed dangerous to show interest in the cottage with these men. He tried his hardest to sound casual, but he couldn't restrain his curiosity. So, what's inside?
Nothing. I've been through every square inch of that old shack, and I assure you, it is an interesting historical site, nothing more. The uneducated fill the vacancy of the place with contrived fantasies. With a little reading, one grows beyond such stupidity.
Alexander paused, released a deep breath, then continued.
They believe their myths and traditions because they want them to be true. Rational people have evidence-based knowledge, not blind faith. Take my advice. Go back to the city.
I've tried, but I couldn't make any headway against the air. It rushed against me. Even as Adam uttered the words, he realized how ridiculous they sounded. Adam cringed when the men snickered. To be thought a fool by such a venerable council mortified him. He craved their approval.
So someone told you about the wind?
Alexander asked. The wind? No, I
know the wind can feel very real. I thought I felt it when I lived in the high country. But studies have proved there is no wind. It is amazing what the mind can convince itself of when it really wants to.
With a roll of his eyes, Dr. Jensen turned and began walking.
Come on,
Alexander said.
If you have any trouble with the wind, we'll help you through it.
The allure of the city and the opportunity to spend time with the great ones compelled Adam. He'd had quite enough of this ill-fated adventure. But he hesitated. He remembered the difficulty of getting through the foliage to make it this far, and had the sense that a second attempt may not be successful. Was it wise to simply discard all his hard-fought progress? Trailing behind the others, Alexander turned back toward Adam.
Are you coming?
The section at the end of the novel that describes the meanings of the points of the parable, in chapter 8, talks about what's the significance of Adam's irrational desire for the little one's approval. And in the study guide, chapter 8 has 6 questions. I'll just read the first. It's the idea behind that part in the story where Alexander said fruit is outlawed in the high country. Remember, fruit in the story represents sin. And Adam is amazed by that statement. He says, outlawed? Why? How do they live without eating? So for him, fruit is the only kind of food he can conceive of. So the study question is this. Sometimes it seems like satisfaction would be impossible without the pleasure of some enticing sin. Have you ever felt like that? Like, if I can't have this, I can't be happy. But it's something God has forbidden. In moments like that, how could Isaiah 55, 1 and 2 and Psalm 63, 3 help you? Isaiah 55, 1 and 2 says this, come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. That passage reminds me that the thing my soul thinks is bread, satisfying food, this thing is going to satisfy my soul, this sin, it's not bread, and it will not satisfy. It won't deliver what it promises. And the thing that will deliver, the thing that's guaranteed to satisfy, is available for free. The real bread is available, but only to the hungry, only to the people who crave it. If I think of that in the moment when I'm tempted with some sin that seems like it'll satisfy, it helps because it reminds me, no, this isn't what it looks like. If I say no to this sin, I'm not going to miss out. I'm not going to miss out. I'm going to come out ahead. I'm going to come out with real bread that really will satisfy. The other passage is Psalm 63:3, which says that God's love is better than life. God's love is better than life at its best. Anything that life has to offer, anything that feels like real living, God's love is actually more satisfying. It's better than that.
Father, I'm so prone to forsake you as the spring of living water and try to dig my own cisterns. Broken cisterns that cannot hold water. None of the things you have forbidden are true water that would quench the thirst of my soul. And yet every time my soul dries up, I'm so prone to go running to them. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. I know that's true, Lord, but so often it doesn't feel true. I think my soul and body are longing for something in this world. I have strayed like a lost sheep. Seek your servant, for I have not forgotten your commands. Lord Jesus, you are the bread of life, the water of life, the fountain of life. Every other fountain is only disguised death. And every time I drink in death, elements of spiritual death invade my life. Yet I quickly forget and go right back to the well, the dry well, and drink again and again. Father, today I want to drink deeply from your well. Help me remember, hour by hour. Bring it to my mind. Remind me
to drink, to seek hard after you. Remind me again and again through the day today that all my emptiness, dryness, longing, desire, it's all thirst for you.
Thanks for listening. To get your copy of the study guide, just go to drichardferguson.com. This podcast and hundreds of other resources are free to everyone because of the generosity of those of you who support this ministry. If you would like to help with a tax-deductible gift, our Venmo is @foodforyoursoul. Be careful, it's not food for the soul, it's food for your soul.
Until next time, may the Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace.